downfield. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome back in to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and of course you. Sorry, we're having some technical difficulties today, so if you could just bear with us, we appreciate it.
Don't worry, I zapped them with my stun gun.
Okay.
They're done.
Great. 201-939-4513 is the phone number you want to get in. As always, monitoring Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, for any questions or comments pertaining to the show. And also, we've got a very special guest who's going to be joining us at 12:30 today, Fred Robbins, former defensive tackle for the New York Football Giants, played under Spag's system, not only here in New York, but also with the St. Louis Rams. And really excited to talk to him. Paul, I know that you had a chance to catch up with him during, what was it, mini camp, right?
Yeah, last week Spags had asked as a favor from Fred if he'd come in and work with the defensive linemen, especially the young guys and the defensive tackles. He did that, had a lot of fun doing it. And as we know, you mentioned Spags and Freddie were real good pals when he was here. And Freddie said, hey, there was even a chance that he may come back for training camp as well. So the Giants, with a lot of young defensive linemen, could use that kind of championship veteran leadership that Freddie can give them.
Yeah, fantastic. And also for all of us here at the Giants, wishing, hoping everybody had a great Father's Day yesterday. What did you do for Father's Day?
I went to see Jurassic World with my daughter.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was really good.
I can't say that in the 6 years I've known you that you've ever seen a movie.
I don't go to movies.
I know
often.
You don't. This is huge.
Yeah.
What'd you think? Give us your... What was that? That's the review? Let's stick to talking sports.
It's then. Really
if
good.
If that's your movie review.
It's really good.
My favorite part of it, spoiler alert, it's been out forever. It's already, I think it grossed like over $511 million its first weekend. But my favorite part of the movie was the relationship the guy had with the Raptors, especially Blue.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
That was I wanted more of that. I wanted more of that relationship that he developed with the Raptors, of course, who helped him kill that epic uber dinosaur that they created in a petri dish. But nonetheless, that was my favorite part of the movie, was that kind of that rapport, that relationship that was developed. I thought it was pretty neat.
I was a big fan of the glass ball that the kids used when they went out and got lost into the world, into Jurassic
right.
World.
Right.
And I won't wreck it for you folks, but there are some things that happened to that glass ball. And it's going to have you, if you watch it in 3D, you are going to be on the edge of your seat.
I can't even imagine watching a movie with you.
Good stuff.
It must be totally insane.
It was fun.
Wow. All right. Well, again, for all of us here at the Giants, hope everybody had a fantastic Father's Day weekend. And we're here talking Giants. As, of course, the Giants minicamp ended, now the players away for the next 6 weeks. They're on vacation, actually. If you do follow Jeff Schwartz, offensive lineman, him and his wife are in Hawaii right now. They're traveling, they're having fun, they're relaxing, and they're getting ready for training camp. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Why?
He's having a good time.
They deserve it. Go out, enjoy yourself, spend time with your family, because
the
end of July, I mean, you know, things change here.
They sure do.
So this is your and my first chance to really talk about training camp. Obviously, you did not see a lot in regard to Odell and Victor Cruz and Larry Donnell. But let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, Eli Manning got a lot of praise in regard to his arm strength and his velocity. He looked good. He's excited. He's ready to start the season. Second year under Ben McAdoo. That's promising. I know Corey Washington was a big hit. Obviously, the offensive line is a concern.
Well, you know, I think that the defense was ahead of the offense, as it usually is in the spring, in the early off season. The things that you had to like, though, besides the two guys you mentioned on offense, it was really good to see the tight ends all get involved as Tom Coughlin continued to rotate each and every one of them, even with the first team reps, because he's trying to figure out who's going to earn those snaps and deserve the playing time. Larry Donnell had a boot on his foot for the early part of the week and then had it taken off for the last practice, but he still didn't work. So that's why the other tight ends are really getting an extra opportunity to show what they can do. The offensive line, again, non-contact drills. They're not hitting anybody, so there's not a lot to see there. And then on defense, I thought, well, the second year in a row now, we're talking about how the offseason has been good for the defensive backs. I thought Prince Amukamara and DRC looked as though they were in midseason form in terms of their speed, their quickness, their ball skills, their anticipation in terms of cutting off routes. I like the way those guys look right now. The safety position, Collins a bit slow translating the bookwork onto the field. Cooper Taylor was the other safety. Same thing for him. So without Nat Burhe on the field coming out with that calf injury a couple of weeks back, that's kind of left the Giants with some questions at safety. And then finally, again, can't talk about the trenches. No hitting going on. The linebackers, Beeson's moving around well. They limited his snaps because they didn't want to see him overdo it. And as usual, you know, we saw a lot of Devon Kennard out there. Although he didn't take as many snaps as you wanted him to. He also was nursing some kind of bruising or injury. But in any event, a lot of positive things came out of minicamp. I think the guys are feeling really good and anxious to get back.
Again, if you've got any post-training camp questions or comments for Paul or myself, please call us 201-939-4513. Hit us up on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Here's one. Any news about signing a vet O-lineman? Again, you know, you've got Marshall Newhouse, who's working at that right tackle position. Wasn't really signed to start. Was signed to come off the bench.
Yeah.
We know that Jake Long was here at some point in time. I still believe that, that Jeff Schwartz has an opportunity to play the tackle position as opposed to the guard if they don't bring in another tackle. What's your thoughts?
I think the radar is still out for a veteran offensive lineman. Now, who could it possibly be? Well, you know, there are a couple of guys out there right now, like Evan Mathis, for example, who according
to... But he plays guard.
According to DeRozan, well, if you did that, you have to move somebody around.
Schwartz, right?
It could be Schwartz, could be Peel. Go back to tackle. According to Drew Rosenhaus, the agent for Mathis, he has 10 teams, and he wouldn't identify them, who have been in contact with him about potentially doing a deal. So perhaps he's a guy who they might take a look at. Jake Long, maybe they revisit with him. Tom Coughlin said they had a good visit. So maybe that still happens. I will tell you this. The Giants are not bashful about trying to upgrade their roster wherever they can, and I still do believe that offensive line is a bit of a sore spot for them.
All right. Again, Fred Robbins is going to be joining us. Let me see if we got a few callers on 201-939-4513. Also, another thing that I want to do a little bit later on the show, Paul came across a pretty interesting article from NFL.com. If you have an opportunity, you want to pull it up because we're going to dive into this today. And Dave Damshek?
Damshek, yeah.
Damshek, he put together an all-NFC East team in regard to if he had to put a team together, who would his quarterback be? Who would his running back be? Who would his three wide receivers be? His tight end, his tackles, his guards on the defensive side of the ball. So we're gonna go through this. Just taking a quick glance at it, Paul, there's some names on here that I'm pretty surprised about who he went with.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited to dive into this. But let's head out to our calls. We kick it off with Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, you're first up on BBKO.
Thanks for taking the call. Happy Father's Day to Paul.
Thank you. You too.
The three safeties, I just want to mention real quick, I remember Perry Fuel would use three safeties, which was trendy, but also Spags, which relates to Spags' new defense. He started to do that the first year in 2007. They were getting burned badly by tight ends, and they took one of the linebackers out and put more of like a hybrid, like a taller, faster safety type. So that was another factor, like that Spags adjusted to the situation. So I'm fully confident in Spags. It might be a little slow in the beginning, but I think they'll be better, you know, out of the gates than they were the first time with Spags.
Well, you remember what he did was he used R.W. McQuarters, who was really a corner by trade,
right,
as a hybrid in the sub package. And R.W., came up with some pretty big plays, especially in the postseason. You remember the interception that ended the playoff game against the Cowboys?
I do. Yeah, I loved him. He was one of my favorites, and that was the year Deion Grant was there. And mostly I wanted you guys to recap, too. But that, I just, like, before I move on, that one year where they lost 0-2 and then won the Super Bowl, a rare thing, too. Amani Toomer fumbled in one of the games,
yeah,
near the goal. but that's like a one in a million to see him fumble. But the players, I wanted to check in basically all the injuries. How are they all fully back other than Cruz? DeMontre Moore, how does he look? And Robert Ayers, Beckham had the hamstring. Basically, is Robert Ayers fully back from injury? And I guess Cruz is looking good. He's ahead of schedule. And Prince Amukamara, is he fully back? If you guys could just talk about the players that were injured last year, other than Cruz, are they all fully back? And I'll let you guys answer.
Thanks, Andrew.
Andrew, thank you for the call.
Well, let's just make this real simple. Every single guy you mentioned, the anticipation is they'll be ready to go day one of training camp. And Victor Cruz, according to Coach Coughlin, may be limited, but the plan right now is if all systems are go, they're not going to put him on PUP. Victor Cruz seems as though he has beaten a lot of the medical reports and a lot of the scheduling that they laid out for him. And, you know, my doubts certainly were that it was at least 50-50 he'd wind up on PUP. And you know what, Anita? He's selling me. He's selling the coaches. He's selling the trainers and the doctors. And he's selling his teammates.
Yeah, but Paul, this is something you know that you have to keep in mind is that, you know, there's no contact yet. I mean,
no, there's not.
Listen, he's running fantastic ghost routes. We're hearing that he's running crisper routes than we've ever seen him run before. But what happens when he's trying to get off the line of scrimmage and he has to dig and he has to pivot and he has to get free from a strong safety or a linebacker if he's coming out of that slot? That's the big question mark.
And with 12 pounds of equipment on, too, which makes a difference.
You know?
Tom said he'll probably be limited and just do some 7-on-7s at the start of camp. But, again, to be honest with you, when I was sitting there in Philadelphia and I saw him get hurt, I wasn't so sure that he would be where he is now. Let me just say that. We'll see.
Okay. I mean, listen, I don't want to be Debbie Downer here.
I'm not saying you are.
But I'm sure I sound like one. I'm really optimistic about Cruz, and he looks great, and he's got a great kind of vibe about him, and he's very positive, and he can't wait for the season to start. All I'm saying is it's great right now, but we need the one thing that makes Victor Cruz so fantastic is that first step. He's so quick. Yeah, right off the line. I mean, you know, like DBs, like say they're scared of him because he's so quick and he burns everybody with that. Is it still there? That's what we need to see. And is he going to be able to swim? Is he going to be able to manhandle and get off the line? You know, that's going to be important.
We will find out.
Let's go to Marco, line 3, calling in from Connecticut. Marco, welcome in.
Hi, Anita and Paul. How are you today?
Okay.
Hi.
Just one comment and then a question for you. A couple weeks ago, you and Paul, I believe, you had a topic about which position of depth can we least afford to lose. Do you recall that?
I'm not sure if
I don't,
if
that
we
wasn't,
did that or it was John and Lance, maybe?
Yeah, that may have been John and Lance. I don't recall.
Okay, well,
I don't recall that topic.
All right. Well, I think the question was, which position on the roster can we least afford? And some positions that were thrown out were, like, you know, if possibly Ruben Randle had an injury, or Robert Ayers, or DeMontre Moore, or, you know, it was just John Beeson, obviously, and then talking about the depth on the team. I wasn't able to call in, but I did listen. And the position that I immediately thought about was corner. And just hearing you guys talk about, you know, would a veteran be brought in at – possibly like a Mathis or an offensive lineman. Of course, you know, management's going to be looking for depth and veterans, no doubt, leading into training camp. I think that this cornerback situation worries me because after DRC and Prince, you know, Tremaine McBride could basically be looked at as a starter considering the position he's going to be playing as a slot corner. But after that, I think it gets pretty thin. And I'm really looking forward to camp to see who, I don't know, Shockey Brown, Mike Harris, if Jaron Osley could finally take the turn.
No.
Or
there you go.
A guy that I've been high on is Chandler Fenner. I know the team liked him last year. Who's going to be the guy there that steps up and makes that position group a little more gives it a little more depth.
I'm gonna help you out here just a bit, because the Giants have the same concerns behind the starting two guys as you do. And so during the course of minicamp, they were playing each one of those backup corners at both positions and the slot. They were giving everybody the complete look-see all across the field, because they need to figure out who's going to be higher on the depth chart and who deserves and belongs to be where. And so your question is valid. It's right on the money. The coaches feel exactly the same way, and they're going to sort it out as we go through August. Now, if they don't see anything they like, you know they'll be picking up the phone, they'll be looking at the waiver wire, and they'll try to get somebody else. Don't forget Bennett Jackson in here, too. I mean, they could always wind up moving him back to corner if they have to, if they think they're set at safety. So there at least are bodies that they can try. I don't know, you know, how it's going to sort itself out, but they got guys they're going to take a look at.
Yeah, and Paul, I'm happy to hear that. And you're going to hear me call, I think, 10 more times up until training camp talking about Bennett Jackson. He's my guy, and I couldn't be higher on another player. I'm really excited about him.
Ten more times.
I'm a fan. I'm really interested to see what he can do. I am a fan.
Hey, just quick question for you. July 15th is this big date that's looming around for the contract situation with a lot of guys. Obviously, we're concerned about GPP. So just so I have a better understanding of this, the Giants offered, they slapped the franchise tag on him. JPP did not sign that franchise tender.
Right.
So now that means he's not under contract with the Giants?
Correct. At the moment, he's not under contract, but they own his rights.
Okay, so what happens if they do not strike a long-term deal and July 15th comes?
Well, then they cannot negotiate a long-term deal till after the season.
And what about his contract status for this season?
He has to sign the tender for the franchise tag to play.
So then the pressure would be on him to sign the deal, or else he's not going to report to camp. Is that how it works?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, then the Giants got to plan as though he's not going to be here. And until he decides to come in and sign it, they're up a creek.
Obviously, the incentive is you don't play, you're not getting paid.
Right.
You know, and you know, the other team in the NFC East, you've got Dez Bryant with the same situation. You know, JPP at least is not threatening to not play. Dez Bryant is threatening not to play.
So, and I don't want to take up too much time. You guys could talk about this off the air. I remember this with Michael Strahan years ago. Different situation. He wasn't slapped with the franchise tag. In 2007, he sat out basically all the training camp. Why? I'm just answer this. Why wouldn't Pierre Paul, who wants a long-term contract, these guys, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, they all do. So why would Pierre Paul, after July 15th, what's his motivation to say, hey, you know what? I sat out minicamp. I'm going to come back now. I'll play training camp. I was going to do it all along. We never came to a long-term deal. Why not just sit out of training camp and really show the Giants that you're serious about the deal that you want and put pressure back on the team?
No.
And I don't want him to do that. But
Here's the thing. If you don't sign the franchise by July 15th, if he signs it after the fact, okay, that means he can come in and play. But he can't negotiate now a long-term deal till after the season is over. Why would he do that to himself? That makes no sense.
That's not what he's saying. He's saying if he's already missed all these OTAs in minicamp,
right?
Why not? You know, you saw what Terrell Suggs, 1 year I was covering the Ravens, Terrell Suggs did the same thing. Terrell Suggs missed the first 3 weeks of training camp, didn't come in till the last week. That's what he's saying. Like if you know, why wouldn't he just do that if he doesn't want to be a part of camp?
He wants to get paid. He wants to get paid, and he wants a long term contract. Why, if he sat out this long, why not stay out for the rest of camp so the team really knows how serious this guy is?
Yeah, but then again, then he's not doing himself any favors, and if he gets hurt during the course of the season and doesn't have a long term deal in place, or is at least talking about one, then he's got himself a big problem at the end of the season, because then his franchise runs out, his tag, and he's got zero. So that's not a good idea.
I think
that's risky.
Everyone assumes that it's a layup, that they'll either strike a deal or Pierre Paul will be here with no gripes about anything.
I'm telling you he will.
In my gut, I don't see it.
No, I'm telling you he will. He will sign the franchise tag, and he will be here to play this season, and they will talk about a long-term deal. And whether or not they come to terms on one by the end of the season, I can't tell you that for sure. But that's the intention, providing he goes out there and kicks butt.
Love you guys. Go Giants.
Take care.
Thank you for the phone call. Let's get to I know we have our guest who's going to come on board. Let me know when you get him on the line. In the meantime, let's answer some of these tweets. Again, hashtag Giants Chat, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and, of course, you. News about Jay Bromley has been very quiet. How's he been doing so far?
Well, I think we're going to find out when we talk to Freddie, because that's one of the guys he's been brought in to kind of look at. So, you know, Jay is part of that defensive tackle rotation. He's now had some time to absorb the system, although now it's a new system with Spags in here. So we're just going to see. I mean, look, at the moment, I don't think he's a starting defensive tackle. Hankins is going to start. Either Cullen Jenkins will be the other starter, or Kendrick Ellis will be the other starter. To me, Bromley right now is still one of the rotation guys. He's not going to be the lead snap guy.
And again, that's from JCS02008. Well, we have our special guest who's joining us. His name is Fred Robbins. I'm sure a lot of Giants fans out there recall defensive tackle, part of that Super Bowl 42 team here, played under Spags. Fred, welcome to the show. You're on with Anita Marks, and of course, you know Paul Dottino.
Hey, how you guys doing?
All right, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time. I guess first and foremost, you know, you have your finger on the pulse of this defensive line better than anyone else since you helped Spags out here during minicamp. Kind of give us a review.
Oh, man, you know, actually, you know, just to be back, you know, in Giants territory and back on the sidelines, just, you know, giving some insight, you know, to the defensive line, the young defensive tackles, and, you know, to give them little pointers and, you know, tips on, you know, what, you know, Spags' defense, you know, how it sells and, you know, what the things to look forward to, what to expect.
Now, Fred, could you give the fans an idea of how complicated, or for that matter, simple Spags' defense is for a defensive lineman, specifically the defensive tackles who have to stop the run first, although you got after the quarterback a lot. I mean, would you have four different seasons with the Giants of at least five sacks? I mean, we knew what you could do. But what are these young guys, you know, the Coons, the Bromleys, even Hankins is a young guy. What's in store for them?
I think one of the most important, you know, hardest things, you know, about Spags' defense is if you were as a young defensive lineman, especially interior line defensive tackles, you know, most guys want to make plays. And Spags' defense, you don't have to make every play. You just have to make your play. And it's more of a, you know, role, especially like you're going to defensive tackle to play. I mean, you got to just be, you know, hard and grounded, you know, really just to take, you know, deal some double teams and a lot of linebackers, you know, make some plays, but also you can make plays as well. But I just think sometimes most guys just get caught up in the, hey, you know, I'm just not making enough plays as I should. And I think, you know, Spags' defense, you really just got to understand the role as, you know, being a lineman. And then when you're allowed to make plays, it's just, you know, just make them. But I think in the beginning, it can get kind of frustrating, you know what I mean? But like I said, man, once you understand the role of everyone, you know, things come out better. You know, most defensive linemen, they understand their role, you know, what they're supposed to do on each play. But in Spags' defense, it'll be beneficial, you know, for you to learn what the linebackers and the safety is doing behind you. And once you understand that, you know, how everybody's roles are set, you know, come together, then they get a better understanding, and then things will work out a lot smoother.
Fred, I know you weren't here under Perry Fuel, so you really, we can elaborate on that. But, you know, we saw this offense go through a change with McAdoo, and it took them a minute to kind of get up to speed. In regard to Spags' defense, how difficult would you rate it in the NFL? And how difficult do you think it's going to be for a number of these guys who've never played in this system to understand it, digest it, and be able to execute it the way that Spags wants it executed?
You know, I think the hardest part, the difficulty is like I said, just understanding it. You know what I mean? Most of the time, you know, with D-linemen, they used to watch a film, you know, with just the D-line group. But in Spags' defense, it's better sometimes to watch the film with the linebackers, you know, and watch it with the secondary. So you can get everybody on the same one page. I wouldn't rate it hard as just being difficult. You know, when I was with the Giants, we had, you know, a good veteran group. So, you know, we had guys come from different situations, different scenarios, different schemes. And, you know, when you're a veteran group, sometimes you just used to certain things being a certain way. You know what I mean? But the good thing about this young group he has here now is that these guys are being able to learn it as they're young. So by the time in a couple more years, they'll be more well-adjusted to it, you know, and it'll be quite smooth a transition for them. You know, like I said, it wouldn't be rated as technically hard or difficult, but, you know, out there we had a bunch of veteran guys who can call to it very quickly. And now it's just, you know, and that's why Spags and kind of come help out because these guys can hear from, you know, a former player, you know, who's been in the defense, who's been in the scheme. And sometimes it's a little bit different coming from a player than the coach.
You're going to be able to come to training camp, Fred? I know there was some thought that perhaps Spags would have you back in August. Is that on tap mm-hmm. right now?
I mean, you know, I hope so. I told him, you know, if you need me to, man, I'd definitely love to come back. You know what I mean? Just be around the facility. I mean, got a little jitters. Got the jitters now there, you know, this past week. But, you know, definitely, man, like I said, you know, my heart is, you know, New York Giants, you know what I mean? And I love the organization from, you know, from the owners to the bottom, you know what I mean? And, you know, once a Giant, always a Giant. You know, they never die. But, yeah, I'd be more than happy, you know, if they wanted me to come back and try to help out in the training camp and, you know, help these guys come along. I'd be more than willing.
Now, Fred, everybody always looks at the middle linebacker as being the heart of the defense, but you and I both know Spags puts a lot of pressure on the front four, a lot of responsibilities on you guys to get it done without necessarily extra help. You could do that when you have a Tuck and yourself and an OC
yeah.
and a Strahan. Those guys are special guys. Now, I don't know
yeah.
if this group of defensive linemen is prepared to handle that kind of responsibility. And furthermore, Spags said the other day something that Anita and I were talking about, I had never heard him say before, that the two safeties are the most important people on the field because the other nine defensive players have to trust those two safeties. And you and I both know the Giants have a bunch of young safeties on this year's team. So how big a whale is this for the safeties and the defensive line to digest?
You know, and that's the thing. You just said a million words. You know, just like I was been saying the whole time, now it's more important for defense linemen to understand what everybody's doing on the field. Not so much your assignment, but, you know, understanding, okay, does the safety fill this gap? Or does the, you know, weak linebacker, does the middle linebacker fill this gap? You have to know what each guy's responsibility is. You know, I think as a young group, they'd be able to take the pressure off each other. You know, when these young defense linemen, defense tackles understand where each safety should be, you know, if he's on a double team too long and nobody can, he should be able to turn around and know exactly who was supposed to fill that gap and get the double team off of.
Right.
And the same thing with the safeties. When they come down to fill a gap, they should be able to know which defense lineman was out of the gap to determine where the ball hits. You know what I mean? So I think now because these guys, they have a young group of safeties and a young group of defensive tackles, they're going to grow together. You know, you look at when I came over from the Vikings and all these other guys, you know, Antonio came up from the Redskins and, you know, Kavika Mitchell came up from the Chiefs. You know, we were setting our ways at some point, you know, we all came together, but we understood the defense. You know, but these guys here, they can grow into the scheme together. We had a bunch of people, guys from different schemes, put together to work on the Spags scheme.
So this is an advantage, you think?
It helped us out because we were veteran guys and we were able to pick up on it quickly. But these young guys, I think the best part about it is they can grow into the system together.
Fred, we've got, I'm sure, as you're well aware, we've got a number of Giants fans who are watching the show, and they're giving you mad love on social media. Ben wants to let you know, loved Robbins as a defensive tackle, reliable monster in the trenches, wish he could still suit up for us. Michael says, Fred Robbins, underappreciated stud, great to hear him on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And Dennis, love to see Fred playing. So getting a lot of love on Twitter as folks are watching in. So again, thank you so much for joining us. One thing Spags did say when he addressed the media last week, because defensive coordinators, defensive coaches, offensive coordinators, offensive coaches were made available to the media during training camp and or mini camp, sorry. And he said that there was some things that he had learned when his time with the Ravens that he's implemented into this defense. Now, I know that you played for him here. You played for him in St. Louis. Did you have any rapport with him when he was with the Ravens? And anything that you saw during minicamp that's kind of an added dimension that made you say, "Wow, this is good stuff. This is going to work here."
I think you know, one of the things that stand out and means we did, you know, when I was there, you know, I tell defense line all the time, man, listen, learn to play more than one position. You know, just don't be, you know, regarded as just a run stopper, a run plug, or a nose tackle. And I think the element of dimension he's bringing from the Ravens, even the time we were there a little bit, we sprinkled in, is that it's a young defensive line, but, you know, they can play different positions. You look at JPP, he can go you know, from left side to right side, even go down inside some. And you look at, you know, in some of these games and, you know, fronts now to make offenses, you know, work harder as far as blocking. I mean, you got a good group of guys who can play multiple positions. You know, Brahma, he can kick down sometime in the pass rush as a nose. Looking Cullen Jenkins, he can play pretty much every position along the defensive front. And I think sometimes just mixing up that little mixture, they can confuse offense or something. So now offensive linemen have to go against the Giants' defensive line. They don't have to just a game plan for one guy they got to go against. Now I had a game plan at least, you know, four or five or six different guys. And that's some of the things we did, you know, when I was with the Giants on the Spags. You know, you look at Tuck, you look at me, you look at Cofield, even Ocean Strahan, even they, you know, guys switch sides and switch positions all the time. And I think that makes it harder on some offensive linemen. You just have to, you know, Tuck was able to go out and beat some centers. He played nose tackle on pass rush.
Right.
You know, some runs, he was big enough to hold up on the run a little bit, like in third down. You know, we didn't have to do it the whole game. You know what I mean? But, you know, certain plays on nickel pass rush games, he was able to go down there and kick down as a shade technique. You know what I mean? I think Spags bringing in multiple, you know, from the Ravens, you know, they run pretty much a dominant 3-4.
Sure.
Now you got, you know, Cullen Jenkins has been in the 3-4 scheme. He had Big Hankins. He can go out there and kick down and play, you know, heavy 4-5 technique when they got the speed rush coming from the outside on. So I think that element is just having guys being able to play different positions or confuse offenses.
Anita, I got to ask Big Freddie while we got him on the air about his closet love for basketball. Because, you know, when Freddie was here, he had these magnetic hands. The ball always seemed to come to him. He'd knock it down. He'd knock a ball loose, come up with a fumble recovery. He knows what I'm talking about. So,
oh, yeah,
Fred, come on now.
Yeah.
One-on-one, you and LeBron James. Who wins? First to 21.
Oh, man. I might be able to get some rebounds on him. You know what I mean? As far as scoring and pure shooting, I don't know. He might get me on that one. But the ball, you know, my hands are magnets to the ball. So I know I'd better maybe get some rebounds on him.
I guarantee it is, Fred. He's not driving the lane on you.
Oh, yeah, none of that.
He couldn't drive the lane on Iggy. Fred, thank you so much for joining us today. Really do appreciate your time and your insight. And again, getting a lot of love on Twitter from the Giants fans that are watching, and they appreciate your time with us this afternoon as well.
Oh, man, thank you, guys. Thank you. I mean, I'm here, and thank you to the fans, too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Fred. Hope to see you in training camp.
New York.
You got it. You got it. What a great guy.
He was a lot of
great
fun.
Great guest. Great get, Paul Dottino.
Well,
look at you.
Well, you know, Freddie was one of these guys who, if you didn't know him right away, you just looked at him, he was a big mountain of a man. I mean, a real 300, you know, 25, 30 pounds, big boxcar frame, always had this, like, laser beam look coming out of his eye. I mean, he could scare you just like looking at him across the room. But if you got to know him, he was a big teddy bear. Really big teddy bear, really gregarious, a lot of fun to be around. His teammates loved him, and that's why Spags made sure he took him to St. Louis after he left. So anyway, good stuff.
Good stuff, good stuff. 201-939-4513. Fred Robbins on board with us talking all things defensive line. Hopefully gave you some insight in regard to what to expect this coming season, this coming training camp preseason. Of course, then the regular season kicks off. I do want to get to this article, but first we've had a few people who've been on hold. So let's head back out to our phone lines. We've got Chris calling in from New York on line two. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, how are you? I just got two quick questions for you guys, and I'll let you get to the other callers. I know you got a lot. One is about the present. Another one's about the future. The one about the present would be about JT Thomas. I've heard a lot that he's, you know, very fast sideline to sideline. But do you guys know if he has any coverage skills? I haven't really seen too many Jaguars games. It's a little bit too painful to watch. So if you guys know anything about JT Thomas, let me know.
Go ahead, Anita.
In regard to his cover skills, I mean, there wasn't a lot of game film that I've seen. I don't know about his cover skills. You?
I mean, when I saw him play the Giants last year, he was all over the field in a run-stopping capacity. I didn't see him necessarily doing anything in the passing scheme or
okay.
coverage scheme that made me, you know, drop my jaw. But
gotcha.
He certainly found a way to get after the ball carrier very quickly.
I would say that him and Devin Kennard, definitely two of the fastest. I'd like to see those two in a race. I think you're talking 1A, 1B, 1B in regard to the fastest, the quickest linebackers that are on this roster. That helps
gotcha.
You out at all.
Yeah, it does, definitely. Next question. This is a little distant in the future, but apparently we have, you know, Eli Manning in the contract here. Obviously, JPP is on a franchise, so he'll be in a his contract's going to be up again. And then I think Prince Amukamara is going to be in a contract here as well, isn't he?
Yes. In fact, they picked up the option on him this season, so this would be the final year of his current deal.
Okay. Is there any? I don't know the cap, obviously, and I'm sure you don't either. Like, you know, what the Giants' cap space is at the moment, but would you think it would be feasible at all to keep all three of them, or some?
Oh, sure.
Them, you know.
Oh, no. There are ways when you structure these deals with the signing bonuses and how you spread them out, and you give roster bonuses and you give them different chunks of money in different years of the deal. They could keep all three of these guys. This is not a situation where they've got so much money tied up in other spots that they're going to be hamstrung like the Cowboys were when they had to cut DeMarcus Ware. This is not a situation where the Giants are crippled for money. They could make these things happen. But again, that assumes that the player is going to come in at a relatively good market value. I mean, if you're talking about a player that says, I want to be the top-paid corner or I want to be the top-paid quarterback, now it starts to get dicey. You know, you're going to need a little help from these guys, too.
Thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it. If you can, and I don't mean to put you on the hot seat, I'm assuming you know. If you don't, obviously you've got a computer in front of you. But this is a conversation I had on my weekend sports talk show in regard to, Eli Manning and the number of guys that are coming up for contract, and the fact that the Giants have done it right in regard to that there's not a lot of money out there. There's not big money on players out there right now where they're strapped, right? Who's the highest paid player on this team right now?
Well, it's Eli.
Right.
And it should be.
Right.
And JPP, obviously, when he gets his franchise tag squared away, he'll be the second highest paid player on the team.
Okay, and the third, a corner, right?
I believe it might be DRC.
Beattie?
Might be DRC.
Okay.
I haven't looked at the upcoming year's numbers. I remember what last year's numbers were. DRC's high, Beattie's high, Cruz is pretty high. But you know what? Here's the thing. The Giants, again, aren't in such bad shape where they have a couple of guys who are so far out of whack that it's going to handcuff them. And that's the important thing to remember. They do have a little bit of room here and a little bit of flexibility. And so, in my mind, one of the things I'd like to see them do, and again, folks, I'm not speaking for Jerry Reese here, okay? You did put me on the hot seat, but it's okay. I would try to get the Eli deal done now before training camp starts so that you can rip up the final year of his deal, okay?
And free up more space.
Free up more space. And then, in addition to that, because the deal is going to be maybe 6 years instead of five or five instead of four, you can also reduce the average number for each of those years as well. So you'll even help your cap next season. That's why, to me, I would think logic says get that deal done first and before the season opens.
This is from Ricker81. It seems like there's a lot of confusion in regard to how the franchise tag works, the July 15th date. He's asking you to please clear it up. So, all right. So players that have been tendered that have not signed their deal yet, clubs have until the 15th to work out a long-term deal.
Yes.
If it doesn't happen, does that player have to sign that tender by the 15th? Or can he drag it out throughout training camp and maybe not sign it till the second or third week into training camp?
He doesn't have to sign it, but then he loses the opportunity to negotiate a multi-year deal during the course of the season. And every player wants that opportunity.
So if the player signs his tender before or on July 15th,
right,
then he has the ability to negotiate. His camp has the ability to negotiate,
yes,
his new deal throughout the season. If he does not, you cannot.
Correct.
So that's the advantage there.
Correct. And every player would rather have that advantage because let's say he signs the thing on the 15th, he comes in, does the training camp stuff, he gets off to a monster start, has 9 sacks in the first 6 games of the season. Well, you know what? He's going to want to be talking, trying to get that long-term deal as soon as he possibly can because, A, he wants the security of knowing that if he gets hurt the rest of the season, he's already got a multi-year deal in his pocket, and, B, he's going to want to strike while the iron is hot. If he's doing really well, especially, and every player thinks he's going to do well and will earn the big money. No player thinks he's coming in and he's going to bomb. Nobody ever thinks that.
Right, especially on a contract year. So now, hypothetically speaking, let's say a deal's not worked out. the Giants have the luxury of tagging him yet again, right?
Next season, they could tag him all over again. You could do it 2 years in a row.
Same player.
Same player. Franchise tag 2 years in a row, okay. if they so choose.
Does anything change there in regard to...
Well, it's the last year you can do it. The only thing that changes is it's the final frontier in terms of the team's ability to restrict the player.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clearing that up. Hopefully that cleared it up for a number of you out there who are a little confused. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ivan. Ivan calling in from Florida. Ivan, welcome. You're on board.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for having me. I love you, that show. Shout out to John Schmelt. One thing before I even start, LeBron was actually destroying Iggy the whole playoffs. He almost averaged a triple-double, so for whoever was saying he couldn't go in the lane on Iggy, I think otherwise.
Okay, you can. If you look at his stats, he was shooting under 30% when Iggy was on him. But that's okay. Go ahead.
He's not going to posterize Freddie Robbins, though, I'll tell you that. Freddie's just too big.
He probably wouldn't. Robinson would put him on the deck before he had a chance. But in any case... one thing I want to talk to you guys about is just kind of how we're talking about how we're saving a lot of money and the Giants want to save a lot of money. But then when I look at it, we never really go for big players for big contracts. So we don't go for a Dez Bryant kind of guy. We don't go for anybody like that. So my question to you guys basically is, what's all the money getting saved for when we're not using it for anything? We're going through the draft. We're trying to, you know, develop our people. But if somebody, there's some splashes out there, we're never trying to make splashes in free agency as far as grabbing somebody who we know is already an accomplished person within the league.
Okay, I'm going to answer you in two ways here. First of all, the Giants spent big money on DRC. In fact, that free agent signing last year came out of the blue. Nobody even thought they were in the market for him. And all of a sudden, they came up with some bucks and they brought DRC in. So don't say that they don't sign any big money guys. He's a big money guy.
I think that was a big tribute to intro Rowe. I mean, he would not came if Rowe wasn't here. We wouldn't even have DRC right now.
I'm sure, but your comment opinion. Was that they don't spend money on big money guys. He was a big money guy. Regardless of the other factors, they had to spend the money because if they don't have the money, Entrell Rowe can't bring him here for free. You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay,
that's true.
So that's
Dwayne
first.
Harris doing $15 million at Dwayne Harris. Like, this is a guy who... All he's going to do is, I mean, hopefully he has some returns, but this is not somebody who's going to even be in the rotation within the receiver core. I mean, isn't that too much money to be thrown at him when there's other guys out there that
to
could
be honest,
the team? We have one safety.
To be honest, Dwayne Harris, even as a backup receiver, is already helping them in four ways. He's a gunner on punt kick. He's a gunner on kickoff return. He's a return guy on kickoff returns, and he's a return guy on punt returns. There are four special teams he already helps them out on, and that's besides the fact that he could also play some receiver. So the Giants see him as a multidimensional tool that they were willing to spend money on. So you can argue about that, and I'm not going to fight you with that, but they did have reasons why they spent money on him. Your other comment, though, I want to just address – the Giants would prefer, and this goes back to Ernie Accorsi's thinking years ago, and I know, Anita, you weren't here for Ernie, were you?
No.
Okay. Ernie's theory was, and Jerry Reese does come from that tree, spend your money to try to retain your best players. You know them the best. They belong here. They fit in here. And if they win here, you're better off spending your biggest free agent amounts or your dollars on those guys than you are necessarily using the big bucks to get guys from outside.
So the Victor Cruises of the world. It's
bingo.
The, that came in,
the Eli Mannings, the Victor Cruises of the world. Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Right.
That's the giant philosophy, the JPPs.
Do you guys think that, I mean, as the game is changing, the NFL is progressing, it's taking different turns. At some point, are we going to have to change the way we're looking at? I mean, the Giants are looking at it. I mean, we're not making the playoffs after time. I mean, every 4 years, everybody's expecting a championship this year. But, I mean, do we really make that jump from last to first? I mean, I really don't see it happening. And I think that the Giants organization needs to start kind of looking to the forward as far as how we're going to start changing things. Because you see how the league is now. I mean, now it's all quarterback friendly. It's all for the offense and not for the defense.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. There are going to be ebbs and flows.
Thank you for your call, by the way.
Yeah, there are ebbs and flows all the time. Right now, what would you say, Anita, if I said to you the league is ebbing or flowing more for offense or for defense? What would you say
based
on what you've seen?
Offense, for sure.
Okay. So, what is the strongest side of the ball? The Giants. offense, right? You'd agree with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, by the way.
So they're right now in with the rest of the Tide. Everybody's in an offensive flow right now. Offenses are kind of controlling the tempo of where this league is going. And the Giants are in good shape in that their strongest unit is offense. That's good. There is sometimes when your team gets caught, and because of the talent that you have on your roster, you're on the other side of that wave, and that's not good because you can't then compete with the rest of the better teams as they're moving up. So I think the Giants are actually fortunate that their strongest side of the ball right now is offense, when offense is what's really controlling the league.
I do want to get into this article before we sign off for the day.
Yeah.
And again, this is from Dave Damshek with NFL.com, talking about the all-NFC team, all NFC East team. Yes. Really quick before we do that, there are a number of people on Twitter that's saying that once JPP signs his tag, that he cannot negotiate, even if he signs it by the 15th. That he cannot.
We're going to have to get a cap person in here because that's the way I understood it.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted us to get it right. That's all.
Oh, I want to get it right too.
Don't get frustrated. Here we go. All right. So this is the all NFC East team. Quarterback. Dave goes with Eli Manning over Tony Romo. Surprised by that?
No. No.
No?
Nope. I would take Eli over Romo too. Not a problem for me.
Okay.
And especially since Romo's had a lot of injuries. I mean, consider,
yeah, he's got a really, really bad back.
Consider Eli's durability and health. I don't think that's a hard one at all.
So out of RG3, potentially Sam Bradford, Tony Romo.
No. Forget him.
Eli Manning.
Eli's the guy.
All right, running back. DeMarco Murray, who, of course, is now with the Eagles, no longer with the Dallas Cowboys. With the Giants, you know what you got? Rashid Jennings, of course. You've got, with Dallas, you've got, came over from Oakland. Help me out here. There you go, Darren McFadden. Thank you very much.
I'm trying to read the salary cap rules. And by the way, over the cap, I do want to get this in. I'm sorry. I want to make sure we got this. Over the cap says if a player fails to come to contract agreement by 4 o'clock on the 15th, the player can only play the season under a one-year deal with his current team, and no extension is allowed until after the conclusion of the season, which is exactly what I told you folks. Anyway, done.
Okay. But I know that's what you said. I guess the question is, if he does come to an agreement, and I'm sorry, if he does sign his tenure before or on the 15th, then can he negotiate throughout the season?
Yeah, I believe he can.
That's what the question is.
Okay.
So running back wise, DeMarco Murray over Alfred Morris. I'd say that would be the only one that I think somebody could really put up a debate for.
Yeah. That's arguable, but based on what Murray did this past season, you'd have to give him the edge. But, yeah, Morris is the real thing.
What are your thoughts on the Eagles' offensive line, by the way? I mean, I don't think – I think a lot of DeMarco Murray's yards in performance last year was due to the fact that he was running behind a phenomenal offensive line.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Dallas has the best offensive line maybe in football. It's certainly top three without any argument.
Would you be shocked if Joseph Randall – puts up the most yards of any running back in the NFC East this year? Would that shock you, or do you think that's a realistic possibility?
I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked, but I would be surprised.
Okay.
Eagles line, though, is better than average. It's not a bad line, although Evan Mathis is gone now. And this guy's, he's been to two Pro Bowls the last three seasons. He's pretty darn good scheme run blocker, and they're now taking him out of that mix. I'm going to be interested to see where that line is now that he's out of there.
All right, here we go. For wide receivers, no surprise here, Odell Beckham Jr. No surprise here with Dez Bryant. And, you look at DeSean Jackson would be the third wide receiver that Dave picked for his all-NFC East team. Just trying to think. I know you got Macklin here, but Macklin's no longer with the Eagles. Now he's with Kansas City.
Right. Based on last year, he would have been in that mix. But no, not now.
Right.
I think... Garcon, Cruz, if he's healthy. I don't know.
Jordan Matthews.
I don't think Matthews
is
on that level.
That's a fantasy guy right there.
Matthews is good, but he's not on that level.
Throwing out the Jordan Matthews.
Yeah, well. No, I don't think he's on that level.
I think one could argue. I wouldn't be surprised if Jordan Matthews has a better season than DeSean Jackson this year.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I'll tell you this.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying that he will. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's a fair argument.
Part of that conversation has to do with the quarterback. And I just think the Redskins' quarterback situation is a mess. And I'm not so sure that the Eagles' quarterback situation is going to be much better.
Tight end, Jason Witten. Now, I'll tell you what. I will put an argument up for this. I get that Jason Witten is more that all-around tight end, that he can catch and he can block. And it's hard to find one of those guys who can do it all. I think Zach Ertz from Philadelphia, I think he blows up this year. I think he has a really big year this year. And also, I really like Jordan Reed. I think Jordan Reed is fantastic. He just had some health issues last year. So I think you can make a very solid argument. No disrespect to Jason Witten. Also, Jason Witten doesn't really score a lot of touchdowns. You know, he puts up a lot of yards. He gives the Dallas Cowboys a lot of yards.
Okay.
But not necessarily a lot of touchdowns. I think you can make a really, really good argument for Jordan Reed.
Wow. At some point, Jason Witten's going to get old.
And I think that some point is now.
I've been thinking that for the last 2 years.
Yeah. So
he's like Dick Clark. He's young forever.
He is. Now, here's really, and we'll end. We'll save the defensive side for the next show that we host together. But just to go through the offensive line, tackle Jason Peters from the Eagles, guard Jason Kelce from the Eagles. So two Eagles players. And then the center, Travis Frederick from Dallas. The guard, Zach Martin, who Paul actually wanted the Giants to draft last year, and tackled Tyrone Smith. So three Dallas Cowboy offensive linemen, two Philadelphia Eagle offensive linemen, no Giants, no Redskins offensive linemen.
You know what was interesting here about the line picks? Kelce's a center for the Eagles, and he put him at guard, and he explains in his copy that he didn't like too many guards in the division, so he decided to move Kelce from center to guard.
Oh, really?
And he says that in his copy, and I'm like, okay, well, I suppose you're entitled to feel that way. Frederick from
well,
Dallas.
He said, well, here, he says that both of them have played guard before in college.
They have, but they're not guards now. Frederick is clearly the best center from the Cowboys. There's no question about that. Yeah, I mean, there are questions about, you know, some of the linemen in this division. I don't know that they're, you know, outside of the Cowboys, who just seem to have a ton of them. And I like the Eagles' tackles. Peters and Johnson are good. But interior, Kelce's okay. And the guards, well, again, Mathis is gone. So we're going to see. I do know this. The Giants' offensive line is creeping up. They're getting better. How much better, we're going to have to see. But they're getting better.
Again, I highly recommend you go online and check out this article on NFL.com. Both Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. made his All-NFC East team. I don't think that's a surprise to most people. You know what? I'm interested. I'm interested. If he does this for every division, I think it would be cool to look and see who he has for every division and then get a feel for, okay, so out of those division teams, the best of – who do you think would win the Super Bowl? With what team? With what team? I think that would be fun. I might go online a little bit later and check that out. Okay. But I want to thank everybody for watching, for participating. I want to thank Fred Robbins, who joined us. What a fun show today. Really great to hear from him, giving us some insight in regard to the defensive line. Are you back tomorrow?
No, I'm back on Wednesday.
And who are you on with Wednesday?
I believe it's John.
Okay, so you'll have Lance and John tomorrow. You'll have John and, of course, Paul Dottino on Wednesday, and I'm actually back on Thursday and Friday. So, again, for all of us here at the Giants, we hope everyone had a fantastic Father's Day weekend. We hope you have a great week. The weather's supposed to be beautiful. Get out, enjoy yourselves, but make sure at noon, Monday through Friday, you're tuning in to Giants.com right here for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great day, everybody.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
touchdown, Giants!